Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. Today is Friday, 12 noon Central, and we're excited to warm up the day with a warm conversation with a musician. He's a singer, songwriter, and professional guitarist. He hails from the historic town of Clarksville, Missouri, and he's traveled all over the world. So he's got quite the interesting story, and he's overcome some very life-challenging situations that we're going to talk about today, as well as creating beautiful, life-affirming music. So our guest today is Doug Giddings. Doug, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Brenda.
Hello, and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's been fun reading about you and listening to your music, and, you know, I just love the song that was in the contest for the Sheldon that was one of the finalists. What was that song, the Missouri Valley song?
I think the finalist at Sheldon Theater in St. Louis.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the New Missouri Waltz, which I was one of the first songs I wrote.
Oh, really?
Many years ago.
Tell us about that. Well, I do want to go back because you started out really getting a lot of great experience in Austin, Texas. And everyone knows Austin is a lot like Nashville, where there's so many talented people, and it's just an incubator for up-and-coming musicians. And So tell us about that chapter of your life. How did you get to Texas, and who influenced you once you were there?
Sure, I'd be glad to, and may I say that I've gotten innumerable blessings and breaks along the way in these situations. I had left my home in West County, St. Louis, and I had grown up far enough West County that I grew up next to a 60-horse stable with a blacksmith, and I traveled to Colorado where I was performing because there were ski resorts, and I came into contact with Stephen Fromholz, who eventually became the poet laureate of Texas, and he had played with Stephen Stills of Crosby, Stills, and Nash after their demise. And he said he was going down to Texas, and we thought he was going to have the next album, and he invited me to join his group. So I went, and it was just a wonderful we were known as the Austin Outlaws because everybody that went to Nashville had to fall under the kind of control of companies. Willie Nelson had to wear this, look like that, sing this, cut that hair, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we didn't care. And we kind of put country and rock together, and I was performing constantly, and I really went solo, and I had the opportunity to open for just all these national acts because their attitude was, why do we get a band to open when Doug can play guitar and sing and just needs one microphone? We don't have to move a whole band.
Yeah.
So that was, became friends with Towns Van Zandt, who wrote Poncho and Lefty and was a legendary songwriter. And one of my great influences was Mr. Mance Lipscomb, a sharecropper born in 1895. And we became very good friends. He was a songster. He said, I'm not a blues man. He could play over 200 songs spanning 200 years. And I used to drive home to Navasota. And he was like a mentor to me and was really everybody was really kind to each other. It wasn't competitive at all. We were just a group of songwriters and singers and musicians, and it was just incredible.
Well, that jumped out to me in your bio about meeting Mance Lipscomb.
Yeah,
Mance Lipscomb. Born in 1898 or something. And
yeah.
That, I mean, I just can't believe you met someone that had been born in the 1800s. But talk about the importance of having a mentor, especially in the music industry, but in any of the creative arts or in business, because a lot of my listeners are entrepreneurs and have their own business. So why is it important to have a mentor, and what can a mentor offer to someone that's coming along in a new craft?
I've raised two sons. One's a motion picture director and theatrical director in New York, and one is a gifted artist, and I always taught them, you're only as good as the company you keep. If you
yes.
have to serve a free internship with the best, and it rubs off. He went to New York, and the top producer he had done an internship for him a little bit in Chicago for free, and he went to New York to try to make it on my son James to, and I'll use him as an example, to try to get on in the Broadway or off-Broadway. He said, Dad, I just found the most progressive theater in New York. So I'm turning in a resume. As it turned out, the man behind that desk was Scott, who's won 7 Tonys. He said, is this James Gittens from Chicago? Hire him. Because he had helped him previously. He knew who he was. For 6 years, he worked with, Matthew Broderick, Ethan Hawke, great actors. Then he made a film, and they all volunteered their efforts for free in return for the efforts that he made on their behalf. So there you see how the world kind of goes around and around. And it takes a lot of people, but it comes back around, doesn't it?
It totally does, and that's one of the things we like to talk about on this program, Alive to Thrive, how we all can pay it forward, how we all can serve as a teacher to someone else, and how in the journey of life, you meet the right teacher at the right time. I wrote a chapter in a book called Help is on the Way, and part of the meaning of that story was that in life, as you're whether you're overcoming a struggle or a challenge, in my case, I had survived a car crash that my mother was killed in, but whatever your challenge is in life, not to give up, because you will meet the right person at the right time, sort of like when the student is ready, the teacher appears. I mean, do you believe that has been true for your life?
Yes,
that
I think so.
Teachers have appeared along the way?
Isn't it Indian, as in Sanskrit, not Native Indian, they're saying that the teacher doesn't find the student finds a teacher. What you'll find is that if you are really positive and you want to learn this, just like somebody in a teacher's class, who does he like the most and wants to work with? The one who's most present and really enjoys the class. So they're going to take you on and assist you, I think, because you have the desire, but you have to have a goal and a desire, whatever it is. And that's what, and I can't understand why I've had so many wonderful people in my life, but I was raised well by a father who was a gentleman and the captain of a USS Butler naval destroyer in the Western Pacific in World War II. And his philosophy was, life isn't what happens to you, son. It's what you do with what happens to you. In other words, you get up and you make it. And frankly, those are the wonderful lessons of life that I've had thrown in front of me that have made me fall. And it's what you do with it that makes the difference. And it creates all sorts of positive effects in your own life. I've also written, if you don't mind me saying so, I write, and I just wrote a line that said, he who lives by the golden rule finds golden apples on the road of life. He who doesn't finds potholes.
I like it. And I like what your father had said. It's what you do with it, and it's how you react. And it's learning to either discipline your reactions so they're not emotional reactions, or it's disciplining yourself to, pick yourself back up and keep moving. And so, you know, being the son of a military leader, a captain, and in the military, Navy, you know, that must have been hard being a musician and a creative spirit with someone who is more of a disciplinarian.
Yes, I
worked
with, he started one of the largest brokerage firms in the United States as a partner with my grandfather at 85, my father at 40, and I was 16 and I worked with them. They were wonderful men, respected, appreciated. They had principles, and that's what and values that I see lacking today. And I enjoyed that time. In retrospect, how fortunate I was. My grandfather was born in 1889, you know, and he worked till he was 85. But I feel very blessed in the sense that, you know, he had me behind home plate with Stan Musial all the time. How do you get these opportunities to use role models like that? So I take little credit for anything. You emulate the people around you.
Yes, yes. And you know, I've heard said that your salary, your income, the quality of your life reflects those five people that you spend the most time with. And if
mm-hmm.
you're not happy with what's showing up in life, change the people you're hanging around with. And, you know, choose and seek out successful people, whether it's in a networking group or in a community like you've created in Clarksville. And we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But talk about a little bit about your mother, because she came from back east and from the Virginia area where I've lived in northern Virginia, and was educated at Georgetown, another place I've actually worked at. And, you know, pretty amazing that she came out, what was considered then probably out west, to help educate people that were moving westward. What did you learn from your mother?
Mother had taste. She had this is right, this is wrong, you know, a sense of quality in doing good, putting things together. And my other son, my other brother, he became the regional manager for Giorgio Armani. He just has a sense of how to put things together, and I'm sure you do it all the time. You get dressed in front of a mirror, and this tie doesn't go with that, those shoes. And she had this wonderful sense of taste, and her mother was the daughter of my great-grandfather, who had traveled out west. So there was nothing but dirt roads between Washington, D.C. and St. Louis. And people have to realize St. Louis was not only the center of the country, but over a million people, and one of the busiest ports in the United States, second only to New York during the days of westward expansion, with over 100 steamboats down on the dock. So it was really a busy place. If you wanted to travel west, you went to St. Louis, then out. If you wanted to go north, you had to go up the Mississippi, and the rapids started north of St. Louis. You had to get out in St. Louis, then go on from there. So the Union Station was the busiest in the world at that time, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry I misspoke and said that was your mother. It was your mother's ancestors. But they were coming west, and it's so true that the Mississippi River and then later in the railroads, you know, this area was a highly populated area, a bustling area. St. Louis now is celebrating its 250th anniversary this year and will be bringing back some of that history. And it seems like you really appreciate and love history from telling the stories of your ancestors and just with what you've done with restoring a historic building. What's the importance of keeping history alive and telling current generations the stories from some of the past?
Well, musically, for instance, St. Louis was the ragtime capital of the world with Scott Joplin and Maple Leaf Rag and all those, and I really got into that when I was in St. Louis, and a wonderful symphony orchestra and other things, and Miles Davis was from that area and others. So I've always described St. Louis as a good place to be from. I think it's a good environment for a man and a woman to have a family, bring up their children, learn a value system. And often has been the case that if they're pretty talented in the arts, they'll go on to Los Angeles or New York, whatever, because that's where the market is. But St. Louis gives you a lot of qualities, and it's always been like that. There's a certain etiquette, if you will, a provincial etiquette in that city that I've always found very respectable.
Mm-hmm. And so are you going to be involved at all with the St. Louis 250th anniversary celebration, or are you interested? We'll have to hook
I'm
you
interested.
Up with...
I haven't any plans at the moment, but okay. Sure, I'm okay. Interested, and I just... It, when you study St. Louis, it is pretty remarkable what happened there over the...
It is remarkable with all the musicians, and I think people know a little bit, but not very much. So you got to see some of these people perform up
mm-hmm.
close and get to see... did you see Miles Davis perform and Chet Atkins, et cetera?
I did see Chet Atkins, and I saw... We had other great players here, and I was... I remember I was performing in San Francisco about 20 years ago in a nice club, and next door was a very nice pianist, a large African-American in a suit and tie, and he used to come in on his break and listen. He asked me, where did you get all that rhythm? I said, well, no. He said, where are you from? I said, St. Louis. He goes, well, that explains it.
Mm-hmm.
T.S. Eliot said, if you want to learn rhythm, live by the river.
Yeah, because the river has its own natural rhythm and
it
a changing
does.
Personality
mm-hmm.
from
and
gentle
to
raging. To
follow those rhythms.
From gentle to raging, and we'll have to talk about the raging river because I know that also ties into your story. But I want to get back a little bit to the 70s and early 70s and you being in Colorado, another place I used to live and love Colorado, and... You know, the fact that you were, again, there, you were there in the summer and meeting various people, and that gave you that connection to Texas, as you talked about. How long were you there, just for a few months?
In Colorado?
Yeah.
Or Texas?
In Colorado, originally.
I think I was out to Colorado, got there in the fall. I think I stayed there about a year. And moved down to Texas and a little bit in New Mexico,
okay.
And I really enjoyed the Great West in those days, so I was traveling around quite a bit, Santa Fe.
Yes. Is that where you started picking up Spanish?
To some degree, yes. I actually live so far away from people out in an adobe that I didn't pick up much from anybody. But I loved, you know, it's... what do they call it? The land of enchantment. The sky's so big.
Mm-hmm.
It can be lonesome, but it can be very beautiful in that wide open way. And then when opportunity started to present itself in Austin, I stayed there for several years, you know?
I was just reading Sean Colvin's biography a few months ago, and she talks a lot about Austin in her book. I don't know if she was living there when you were there. Did you ever cross paths with Sean Colvin?
No, Lucinda Williams, the writer, was a good friend of mine. But when I got there, that was like 72 or 3, and really 6th Street wasn't anything. I was one of the first performers down there. Now they have to roadblock it and everything on Fridays. So it was really the beginning of a very good scene with Michael Martin Murphy and numerous national. It was this period of the singer-songwriters, and... was a great education.
I love it. And I love Lucinda Williams. I got to see her perform in Boulder, and she's fantastic. And do you stay in touch with her?
I have tried, but it's been difficult. She was kind of like a new friend of mine when I was already performing down there, and she became a friend, and she'd asked me if she could go to performances with me to get in because nobody had any money. And I said, sure. And then was headed back to Missouri in my 56 Chevy Nomad, and I asked her if she wanted to go to see her father in Fayetteville, because I knew she lived there, and she said yes. So Her father was a very good poet, a professor of poetry at Arkansas. So I drove her up and stayed a few days and met him, and we played music and had a wonderful time. And then I went on and visited my family. You know, again, I'm often amazed at why things worked out well for me, but realizing that you had room for somebody else who might appreciate it has paid a lot of dividends. I didn't know mm-hmm. she was going to become Lucinda Williams, one of the most well-known songwriters in Nashville. She was 20 or 21, and I was 23 or 4, so I was more like a big brother, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But those
oh,
were...
And have you thought about writing your own memoirs or book?
I have many times. There's just so much there, and I've got a few years, I hope, to do it.
Yep.
I'm not
and,
finished.
And a lot of your life experiences show up in your songs. And talk about your songwriting. I mean, do you write every day? Do you just write when the spirit moves you? Talk
yeah,
about
I have to have a reason, somewhat of an inspirational reason, or have found something musically that sticks with me. And this is neat. This is a neat passage. What does it say? And Charles John Cordo, the famous poet who worked with Crosby, Stills, and Nash and other people, became a good friend of mine. He always said, you know, writing and poetry is adding dimensions to a feeling. So what you're trying to do is find a solid foundation and then develop around it something, you know, that
mm-hmm.
that properly resembles the emotion or whatever that you're experiencing or the subject you're describing.
Mm-hmm. I just
but
saw
I really
a
don't
film.
I go through periods of writing. I started writing Missouri Bottom Road in my hospital bed in St. Louis, but I hadn't written
mm-hmm.
in quite a while, but it had to be done, self-expression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk about that. And I just wanted to ask you, last night I saw sort of an older film made. It was called Nowhere Man, about John Lennon's teenage years.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen it?
I think I had seen it many years ago.
Well, it was fascinating. It was on Netflix, and it was fascinating because it shows his songwriting with Paul McCartney, and Paul, I guess, lost his mother at a young age. She died of cancer
mm-hmm.
when he was like 15 or something,
mm-hmm.
and so he wrote a song about her. It sounds like a love song, and I know when my mother died, love songs, particularly country western love songs, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I mean, really touched me. And but it shows this songwriting, his early songwriting development as a teenager. It was fascinating how they collaborated. And so out of tragedy, sometimes a beautiful song will emerge. And sometimes that out of those painful situations, it can lead to our healing. And a friend of mine said, out of our brokenness is the bridge to success and the bridge
mm-hmm.
to happiness. So you've gone through some very trying times, and I wanted to talk about that, if we could just jump right into that, because
mm-hmm.
it's only at the end of your bio is this big zinger that you were dealing with restoring the church, a historic church in Clarksville, creating a beautiful center there, and then the floods came, right?
That's right.
And so that must have been heartbreaking. What was that like? I mean, had you
that whole
had
year
that
was,
place for only about a year?
That whole year was one difficulty after another, and I began
mm-hmm.
to question my value system and everything, because as we said earlier, what goes around comes around, but if what was coming back around after I tried to do something right was quite a bit different than what I expected, and it went from one thing to another. In fact, at one point, I was pulled over on the highway because my plates had expired, and there was a warrant out for my arrest. And I went to jail for 2 days, and it was a bureaucratic error. That's the kind of things that happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't do anything.
My year like that was 07, but yours was 07-08.
Oh, 08 was amazing, and the market
yeah.
crashed. I had retired with some
yeah.
money, and oh, it was one thing after another. But I had 2,000 feet downstairs and had built out of the utility room upstairs a bedroom. So when there's a flood, I met people that didn't have any place to stay or that needed things moved, and that was my priority. We all need to help each other in a situation like that. And I don't take references. I don't run your name through a computer to see your criminal record or anything. And there was a couple that were had seemed to be helping me out, seemed to be of promise. And my point was just to help them get a hand on the ladder and back into life. I had the room and glad to help, but I got her a job where I worked. But she got fired, and she's inquiring where to get a gun. And as this news came back to me, one Saturday night they came up with the idea that killing their host, taking his goods to a new state, and starting all over was a good idea, which sounds pretty illogical, but that's the way they approached it. So on Sunday morning at 8 a.m., I was upstairs and attacked with a hammer and knives, most unusually, no one should have survived that, but I did for some reason, and then I won and held him down till the police came. But I got innumerable breaks. The knife didn't work because I don't keep any of my knives sharp because I had injured a finger years ago and lost part of a finger. And I'm always afraid to wash knives because you cut a nerve and I can't play guitar anymore with those fingers. So there were innumerable little things that happened. The most unusual was that I freed myself upstairs where they had left me to die and picked up the phone, and I got a phone line and called the police. They had cut the phone line, so I don't know what phone it connected to or how, but 911 worked. The police still can't figure that one out.
Wow.
And
that must have been terrifying. I can't even imagine. My guess,
I was airlifted to St. Louis, too, and just the end of the story is that I was airlifted to St. Louis with a broken jaw, a broken cheekbone, an eye practically hanging out, a cut throat from behind with a saw knife, and I expected the worst, and I got literally an African-American doctor, very famous, well-known as Dr. Makepeace. Isn't that a beautiful name? He put it all back together. And I was performing in 2 weeks with sunglasses on so you couldn't see my big right eye. And I'm in better shape than ever and more grateful than ever to be alive. When you've been to death, that's when you really begin to appreciate the simple things, the things you took for granted, you know? So, again, it's what I learned from it. And I've seen people in hospital for a year or two with accents. They were in much worse shape than I was, dear. So it's the way you look at it, you know?
Yes.
Having a father who's a captain of a destroyer and a nephew who's an elite Navy SEAL in Afghanistan did not hurt.
I was prepared. He had prepared me for it. I think you're being very humble. I mean, I think it's part miracle and part, you have probably a big purpose here on this planet. And part that you had that positive mental attitude that, willed yourself to a combination of spiritual intervention and that positive thinking that got you back out on the performance stage 2 weeks later. That's unbelievable. And so whatever happened to that couple, did they get arrested and go to jail?
Well, they were arrested. They blamed me for everything. But what they generally do is when there's two people involved in a crime, they put them in separate rooms. And they do a he said, she said. Well,
right.
You can't get it all right, and the lies started piling up. She blamed him. He blamed her. Then I had to stay in Clarksville for an indefinite period expecting a court trial, which I'd have to, be a witness. The district attorney asked me what I thought about it. I said, well, I believe they're a threat to society on behalf of all Missourians. I want to put them away. Because if I can do that for them and feed them and everything, what do you have to do to warrant an attack? He said, I agree. And unusual, it was so obvious what they did. They pled guilty to the crime before the court trial, and each got 20 years.
Wow. Wow.
It's amazing that people think that way.
Sometimes
the
justice system works well, and people face their judgment day. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We have a station identification and a public service announcement.
All right.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. Our guest today is singer-songwriter Doug Giddings of Clarksville, Missouri, and a fascinating life story. And stay with us. We'll be right back in just a moment.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Romaine. As a former model, I used to walk runways all over the world. Paris, Milan, New York. This is Salif Diarra. As a local health worker, he walks the pathways of his village in Mali, West Africa, every day to help treat severely ill children. Like many children in the developing world, those in Salif's village are threatened by common illnesses that kill millions worldwide. But unlike villages without a local health worker, the children in Salif's village get the care they need to survive. And even though you can't walk in his shoes, you can help him with his work. Help one, save many. See where the good goes at goodgoes.org and find out all the ways you can help get the good where it needs to go. Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
Hey, welcome back to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. Our guest today is Doug Giddings, and we're talking about his overcoming a lot of different things in life and going on to create some incredible music. And I want to talk, he not only does beautiful acoustic guitar and is a singer-songwriter, but he also, this is just so surprising to me, after visiting Brazil many times, performing there, his music is very influenced by that, and he can sing in Italian and in Brazilian Portuguese. So, Doug, talk a little bit about the influence of traveling internationally and how that influenced your music.
Well, initially, I got into Brazilian music. I was living in San Francisco, and I was married with two children. And I was in Silicon Valley working, and I might add that happened only because I had a dream and saw no college students graduating with a microcomputer degree because it had just been invented. I swept floors and did inventory for 6 months to work to cashier, then sales manager, and corporate accounts. But it seemed normal to me. Those were the values I was brought up with. And I became ill with chronic fatigue and was in bed for about 6 months. And I told my wife, you better take me to a psychiatrist because I might jump off the bridge. I was living in this black and white film noir world. Do you remember those movies?
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. And I'm a type A person. And I went to a psychiatrist, and she, after a few sessions, she said, you know, every time you mention music, you get a smile. Do you still play? I said, it's been 8 years. I stopped.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I had used to have a saying in Texas, if you don't make it by 30, do something else. Get another job.
Oh.
You know? So I had been in Hollywood and played for the president of RCA and everybody, and they wanted to sign me, and then disco hit, and I was selling apples, and they were buying oranges, and that was the end of the singer-songwriter period. So I moved
wow.
to San Francisco and found that situation and enjoyed it very much and was able to support my family well. And but I was sick, and so I started playing music, and it was a little more jazzy. I didn't know anything about Brazilian, but the lovely thing about a cosmopolitan metropolitan area is there were lots of great Brazilians. And a new club had opened down on Market Street, Bahia, Brazil. And I started going there, and I met musicians and started working with them and learning, and I had to phonetically learn the words because I could barely understand them. But I had Latin as a child, and Portuguese was the last language that was influenced by Latin because it was the last area that was overtaken by the Romans. So when you read it, the basic, parts of a word, you know, like submariner, below water person,
mm-hmm.
were very similar. So it wasn't hard to get it, but speaking it is amazing, and nobody can do it. For instance,
mm-hmm.
the word concentration, which was required a lot, is pronounced concentração.
Mm.
It was the most beautiful language. I found that they had the greatest guitar-based songs with the finest singing and melodies and language from Europe and African rhythms from the Yoruba tribe, 2,000 years old from Africa, because they were the only other part of the North or South American continent that had African-American slaves. But it was different. It was just, and they developed their own culture. So I threw myself into it and went down with some friends and never knew what to expect. One thing I learned down there was the first time I went, my friends backed out, and I went and I told a Brazilian, I said, Franco, I'm pretty concerned. I'm a little nervous. I'm going down alone, 9,000 miles. I don't know anybody. I don't know where I'll be. I don't know what's... You know what he said? Douglas, you always find your own level. Gentlemen mm-hmm. find gentlemen. Crooks find crooks. Isn't that true?
Yes. I want to repeat that. You will always find your own level.
That's right.
That's interesting. Because when you move to a new state or if you travel overseas, I'm planning an international trip this year myself to Africa, and I've never been there, and I'm going alone. I'm going
there'll
on a
be
program.
Wonderful people there.
You will always find your own level, and you will attract, I say, like attracts like. So you
That's
attract
right.
like-minded people.
And then when I left the airport, I was with a fine businessman going to Barra Tijuca, the beach of Tijuca, where Antonio Carlos Jobim was. He said, let me take you to Copacabana. You know, I said, thank you, sir, you know, and we had a pleasure and shook hands, and that's how it worked out. Treat people with respect and courtesy and be willing to help them, and they will do the same for you.
Mm-hmm. So true. So you get to Brazil. What was your do you remember your first impressions, or what were some
well,
of the things that...
Well, coming from San Francisco, which is one
you.
Of the most beautiful cities
mm-hmm.
you've ever seen...
I love
Rio was even more beautiful with a Cristo de Redeemer, the statue of
mm-hmm.
Corcovado,
mm-hmm.
was incredible on top of a thumb-shaped granite rock in the center of Rio. It was just the most dramatic city I'd ever seen. And then the beaches
mm-hmm.
and everything. It was, and people were happy. They generally had their priorities in order. I often said that... when I was in North America, people's priorities were frequently money, status, friends, family, and their creator. In South America, it's the reverse. Your creator, the fun of life, your loved ones, and then your career and things of that nature. So they had their priorities in order, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up that quite a lot. They were very kind to me. Their attitude, if I may say so, was, I thought they'd say, listen, you're very good, but you're an American. You know, most Brazilians
mm-hmm.
are part African, part, a little Indian, a little European. And they said, we love you. I said, why? They said, you play our music so well and you sing it perfectly. You must have worked very hard as an American to do that. You must love our culture a lot to do that, so we love you. That was their attitude.
Oh, that's so neat. And
I know,
and,
that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that is really cool. So you stayed there, and you were there the first time, and you performed your first trip down there? You were
performing? Well, they said I was the only American who came down who could speak Portuguese. And I'd go to clubs, and I'd say, you know, eu gosto sua música, muito. I like your music, beautiful, you guys are great, and everything's just, you're an American, you play too? Why don't you come in next Saturday night and do a set? So I played at Club Vinicius, which is where Girl of Ipanema was written, and I spoke with Eloisa Punheiro, who was the girl from Ipanema. And,
my God.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Wow.
And she was so nice to me, you know. And I would wonder even how they'd say Douglas down there. And they say Douglas. Douglas.
Douglas.
So it was a wonderful experience. And when I played music, they were charmed that an American loved their country and their music, which they're very proud of and should be. And I just got into it, and I could speak Portuguese pretty well, but I devoted myself to it pretty seriously because I thought the songs, you listen to the old bossa nova before, and I say 60s, late 60s, you know that bossa nova was the most popular music in the world before the English wave of music, you know, and the Beatles and everything. A Girl from Ipanema, different songs that we still hear jazz players play, but we don't know that they originated in Brazil by Jovim, like One Note Samba, ba da 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 da. You know, they're all from Brazilian, and I loved it. You know, and it was a beautiful place. But after 3 or 4 weeks, someplace, I love Missouri. I love the forest. We have 5 geographical areas here. I live down in the Ozarks and work down there, and I just think it's just unique. I often thought about moving back to Brazil, but when I found Clarksville with the river, the trees, and it just seemed to have everything. I've got trains going by, barges, an island on the other side than Illinois, and, you know, I really began to appreciate it.
Well, I do want to mention, before we talk too much about Missouri, that you have a CD called, you pronounce it Samba America?
Samba America, yeah.
Samba America, and it's available on cdbaby.com. If listeners want to go get it there, you search for Doug Gittings, G-I-T-T-I-N-G-S, or go to his website, DougGittings.com, and there are links there to read his biography and check out the music, his Brazilian music CD, beautiful cover there. I love that artwork that you chose for that cover. It's gorgeous. And so very diverse taste. And then Missouri Valley, the CD is gorgeous. I can't stop listening to it. And you know, Clarksville, I've only been there once or twice, and like you said, it's a beautiful town. It's on the river, historic town, lots of great local craftspeople, a great chamber of commerce, a wonderful business community that supports creative types and entrepreneurs. So you found this old church, and it was, what, for sale? It was sitting there empty?
Well,
and how did you get the building?
I had some money, and I thought, because I grew up in West St. Louis County when there weren't many houses there, I loved the woods, the trees, horses, and fishing and things, and I drove up to Clarksville to look for a possible little place to live. And I met someone. I figured the best thing to do is go in the local bar and sit around, have a beer and chat. And somebody said, well, there's a house close to us that's for sale. And I said, oh, that's wonderful. He said, would you like us to drive you there? I said, sure, that's great. As we left, the woman put the phone down and said, it's been sold. And with the floods, they were all on stilts closer to the river. said, but you know, there's this church over here that's for sale. It came down in price again. I said, really? Well, I've performed around enough. For instance, Noe Valley Ministry in San Francisco is a church that's been converted into a music hall. And I went over there, and it was a beautiful, historic church that needed work. And there was a crack in the window. I looked in, and I saw a dream. And it wasn't very expensive. I'd say about as expensive as a new
as
pickup
a
truck. So I raced off to Troy and bought it.
Wow. Fantastic.
And I lived there, and I worked on it. Birds had been living in it and everything. But it is, it has the most beautiful 40-foot-high ceilings with craftsmanship. I think it's old German craftsmanship. It's exactly like the craftsmanship I've seen on the ceilings at the Washington University's Law Library in St. Louis.
Wow.
So it's wonderful. And so I just started working on that and putting money into it. And I often said, I have the largest living room in the state of Missouri.
So what's the seating capacity in the auditorium?
It's about, I think it's 120. It's rather intimate. You
I
don't
thought.
Really even need a sound system. So it's about, you know, it's the seats were made, I think, in Flint, Michigan in 1890. They're all metal rails with good wood seats that fold up. And, yeah, everything was just restored. And the walls, the glass, for instance, I was surprised but grateful that it didn't really have religious icons on it. It was just colored stained glass.
Oh, perfect.
More appropriate for, a music hall.
Yeah.
And I met with each of the neighbors and told them what my plans were, and I respect their privacy and what I was going to do, and they were like, hey, we're glad you're buying it. Go ahead. Thanks for coming over and telling us.
Oh, good.
Well,
that was
friends.
Smart. So many businesses neglect to make friends with the neighbors, and that's just smart, as well as kind. It's important to get the support of your local community. And were you able to get any historic funds to do the restoration?
I didn't at first, and we're probably going to do that in the near future. We're starting to have little tuck point problems and a few roofing things. And after the flood and the incident, I moved out for a while, and I've kind of put it on hold a bit. Between the economy and numerous other factors, I kind of took a wait-and-see attitude, and my creator has his own timing, and perhaps I was too far ahead of it. I've often said, another analogy I use is, I have an image of a bridge over one of the Missouri rivers in Mississippi, and I say, when the vicissitudes of life wash out the bridge of your dreams, his detour is often much better, you know?
So is it open to the public in the winter, or are you going to open it this summer?
Probably open it this summer, and
The
interior is really nice with red carpeting and seating and a stage and a little sound system. And I have a recording studio in there. That's where I record all my albums. So even though I did some performances there without a lot of support because I couldn't really get the advertising I wanted, I lost a lot of money in the stock market just because it crashed, you know, in 2008. So it was only so much I could do. So it needs kind of a revival, so to speak. And I just recently met with the historic committee. It's a historic registered church, and there are certain things they requested to be done to it. And I said, I'd like to do that, and I also need the support of the community in doing it, you know, because don't think of me as the owner. I think of it as a nonprofit community resource for the community.
It is.
Parksville,
it totally
or the whole area.
Is.
So let's jump in and use it, you know.
Yeah, totally. And not just for Clarksville, but for Missouri in general. And I will definitely help get the word out and help
make
some connections for you. And I don't know if you met with Penny Pittman on that committee, but I know she's very active with historic restoration and did a lot of Main Street St. Charles. And and she's passionate about saving some of these buildings and getting the funds needed. So, I'll definitely talk to her as well. But so it will be open. What weekend do you think? In May, or do you have a specific date?
I'm hoping it will be. I'm hoping that it will be. I pretty much have the interior set up. I just need to check outside. It's a tall building to make sure that it's safe in all regards, and I really do need to fill out the proper, I think it's a 501 type form.
Yeah.
Which, I tried to fill out previously, and I got an official call from somebody saying, well, you're not registered. I said, well, I'm trying to get registered. I filled out the form. It's in my lawyer's office, but that's down the road in Ellisville. But he's not there because he's under 10 feet of water. So that's the way it was. You know?
Yeah, that flood was really devastating. And so you've been working on this building and you've been working on your music and you have your new CD out. So what's next? What's coming up for you in the next few months? What's on your agenda and where can people see you perform?
I stay in Clarksville. I like it here. My purpose for building, or not building, for restoring the church, and I didn't want to build a new church or a new music hall. I've tried to restore it in its original condition with some lightings and things, is that if the music hall is successful, I don't want to really travel anymore. I'll be 64 in a month. And I'd like to perform there and use it, maybe sell CDs and get into marketing and sales on it. But in all honesty, I get pretty darn tired about talking about myself. It's just really, it's old news to me, but I've enjoyed speaking with you. Don't misunderstand that. But promoting yourself, it's a lot easier to promote somebody else or some other product that you believe in. And I just not me.
Right. Well, that's what I work with a lot of nonprofits, and I've done fundraising for 30 years. So it's interesting we're talking because we'll have to talk offline. But you know, I always tell, whether it's a musician I work with or an author, I work with a lot of speakers and and authors and people that have books or music to promote. You know, I say you should do what you do best. You create the art. You create the music. Whatever it is you create,
well,
you do that. Leave the marketing to someone else. Leave the fundraising to someone else because there are people that love doing it, like me, the way you love writing a song. I mean, that's part of your core essence of your being is songwriting and telling a story, and you're an excellent storyteller, and we want you to have more time to do that, and we can build the team of people around you to do the other stuff to save the building and keep it a community center for many, many years to come.
Yeah, I thank you very much for your comments. I'm a team player. I played in St. Louis, and it's all about realizing your teammates are more important than you are, because you'll never get anywhere without them, you know, and that's just what I've learned, and that's the way I put things, and that's how you win World Series, really, is there's a common respect and there's a commonality that one has to have with the people around them of a goal. And you just take the bad with the good, and you. One other comment is: I've seen great teams succeed, and the great ones, whether they win or lose, you go in the locker room, and Brenda, you can't tell the difference. They gave their best. Tomorrow's a new day, and that's just things I've learned. It's only taken me 60 years. I don't know why our Lord only gave us 80.
Well, now it's 90 or so. There's people living to 90 and 100, so.
Yeah.
You got
more time. I'm enjoying life and appreciating simple things. I have one of my main interests has been since I lived in the Ozarks where Edwin Hubble was. I really got into astronomy last decade, and I have a small planetarium, a small observatory here, and I have a new telescope coming after going for a few. And I love looking up at the heavens, and I thought the best description of it, it's a monastic activity. You're alone and can appreciate and reflect on the creation. I'm a member of the Vatican Observatory Guild in Rome. So that's really where I put my energy the last year or two, and I love it. And it's amazing how everything works so well, doesn't it?
Well, that is really cool, and maybe you can have some viewing nights where people can come up and look at some of the meteor showers or
I love
some
it. It's
of the
called
planets.
An outreach program. We all have outreach programs. I belong to groups. And many guys are really big givers and sharers. In fact, Saturday, if any one of your listeners is interested, is Eagle Day. Eagle Day, sponsored by the Missouri Department of Conservation. I can look out my window as I speak with you and see a dozen eagles, bald eagles, in the cottonwoods on the river 100 yards away. I will have a 100-millimeter beautiful telescope focused where you can see it filled with the bird in perfect photographic. And they have these wonderful exhibits, and they have speeches, and an eagle has, about 1,000 pounds of pressure per square inch in their claws. And I've used it, and I've got about 130, which is really high, but I always thought I had a strong right hand.
Wow.
It's wonderful,
so
and I'd encourage anyone to come up here. The eagles are here, the lock and dam, there'll be telescopes, there'll be speeches. So it'll be wonderful, and please,
very
if you come
cool.
here too, you're welcome to stay with us.
Oh, man, I wish I didn't have a conference on Saturday, but that sounds like so much fun.
I think it's Sunday also, isn't it? Yes,
is
I apologize.
Sunday
it's Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe I can come up on Sunday. So it's Eagle Day in Clarksville, Missouri, for those listening. And go up and enjoy strolling through the shops, go down by the river, view the eagles, take some pictures. And, I mean, that is just a really being new to the Midwest. I mean, I've been here 9 years now, 9 or 10 years.
Yeah.
But I still haven't seen the eagles. And so that is on my bucket list. And so
I know.
Who knows? Maybe I'll be up there this weekend.
Wow. I might add that there'll be pelicans. A lot of the birds and geese and things have to come out of the north on this cold winter. There are often pelicans, gulls, and other things, other aviary critters flying around and going in the water. And because the lock and dam is here, they love it. A lot of the water flows over. Sometimes fish are a little dazed by that experience, and those eagles can go down and pick up a fish. I would best describe it as you walking by a buffet table and using your index finger and your thumb to pick up a salsa chip. Just pick it
plenty
up.
Plenty of good eating. Well, Doug, this has been totally fun, and I want to encourage people to go again to your website, DougGiddings.com. Listen to some selections of his music. He's got lots of little clips there of his songs. I apologize we're not closing with one. I did not get a chance to upload one to the dashboard here, but people can go listen and buy Doug's CDs. I am going to give a shout-out to a friend of mine whose birthday it is today, and he's another singer-songwriter actually from the Virginia area. His name is Stephen Gelman, and we're going to close with one of Stephen's songs called Peaceful World. And, Doug, I'm sure we'll be hearing more from you, and we'll be seeing you soon up in Clarksville, Missouri.
And thank you for giving me the opportunity to share with you the experiences that we all learn from. And I wish everyone in your audience the very best. And hang tough and keep the faith, and you'll be fine.
Oh, thanks, Doug. It's awesome. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
America to Australia. a sister and a mother, a friend, a spouse, and a lover. Treat each other well, no one is going to hell. Teach love, not...